Today's episode is brought to you by Wise, the account that helps you manage your money around the world, which is huge for travelers. I've been a customer and a fan for 10 years. The Wise account helps you send, spend, and receive in different currencies fast, and they do it all without hidden fees or exchange rate markups. This service has been so critical for me in my life as a traveler, as a nomad, as somebody living abroad. And you can join 16 million customers and learn how the Wise account can help you out on the road at wise.com/travel. That's Wise, WISE.com/travel, or download the app. This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
So I define play as any joyful act you do which has no result.
You just heard from my guest today, Jeff Harry, and his definition of play, which is actually his entire job, is to help people play and to play himself. Really fascinating work that he's created for himself. And of course, we dive into this and talk about how play relates to travel. And from that, the conversation takes many wonderful and interesting twists and turns. We touch on things like expectations and happiness and toxic positivity, and he even issues a challenge to everybody at the end of this show. And there's just a ton of takeaways from this conversation that you can implement into your life, starting today, starting after this show. So I'm curious to hear what you get out of this show. I certainly don't want to spoil too much of it here. I know you're going to love listening in on the interview today. And, you know, we always have some other stuff going on in the show. We're going to give a shout out to somebody in the community. I'll share a little bit about how I play, how I like to play in my personal life. And it's all happening right now. So buckle up, strap in, grab your favorite beverage, relax, enjoy a little you time. Thanks for being here and welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey, what's up? It's Jason with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show, my friend. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. One of the things I've been putting off that I am excited that I finally started doing, it was more for lack of time, but maybe that was just an excuse, right? But I was like, you know what? I'm going to dive into this. I'm going to do this thing. So I'll tell you about that in a second. And this is a bit of play for me, right? We're talking about play today, as you heard at the top of the show. It might sound like a funny topic, but you're going to be surprised at how much I think it relates to travel. And Jeff and I talk about that. And it's just such an important part of life to play. I mean, I have 2 kids now, and I get to play probably more than ever as an adult with them. But even before I had kids, you know, I always liked to play. It's fun to play. And sometimes we get caught adulting. I learned that term from my friends Jason and Kelly. I can't remember. I don't know where it originated, but there's this term adulting, you know, like paying bills and all these different things we have to do. And it's like, yes, that's a part of life, but we can play too. And yeah, I'll share a bit about how I'm playing nowadays outside of playing with my kids. And of course, we got a shout out to somebody in the community that I wanted to recognize and more coming after the interview. Now, let's get into the interview and you'll pick up where Jeff and I started kind of chit-chatting, and stick around after the interview segment. We'll talk a bit more about play. I'll share a little bit about play in my own life. We will give a shout out to somebody here in the listening community, and I'll leave you with a nice little quote to end this episode. So I'll see you on the other side, my friend. Please enjoy the interview.
Hey,
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
What's up, man?
Good morning, good sir. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm just testing out all my stuff.
Test your stuff.
Let's see.
Test your
how
stuff.
How this works.
Will I be able to see your face on this call? Cannot have this conversation without seeing your face. There you go.
Does that work? Hello.
Especially because I've been seeing that mug with those those so expressive eyebrows on those videos you've been making, which are fantastic. I mean,
you also get a little shoulder action too. That's the part that people sleep on. It's about the shoulders. People sleep on the shoulders, dude.
Oh wait, what? The shoulder dance?
People sleep on the shoulder action.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm literally doing a we're running this like workshop on this summit, and we had to record for it.
Yeah.
And I threw a lot of shoulders in just because I was like, I don't think anyone on the HR summit is going to be putting shoulders. You know, we got to step our game up, people.
Yeah, you like, got to step your shimmy game up. Is that what that would be?
Yeah, exactly.
get your shimmy on. That's something I say every day. Hey, guys, it's time to get your shimmy on, all right?
Yeah, you're like, I at least say that 4 times a day. You know, yeah. It's really important that... and have a good day and have a good day. It's like those are interchangeable.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Some of these sentences because I have two small kids. So some of these sentences I utter, like I was just talking about this with another parent. It was like, I never thought I would say that sentence in my life. You know, it's like, hey, get your hand, you know, whatever it is. Like, I can't even think of an example. It's like the wackiest thing you could imagine. Like, Stop putting the ice cream into the Legos and, you know, smearing it on the wall or something. It's like, what? Like, why would that combination of words ever have to come out of my mouth ever in the history of humanity? But so it goes. What time is it there?
It is 7 a.m., man.
Oh, man, are you an early bird?
I am. So, like, I'm like, let's go.
Whoa, yeah, I mean, what time are you usually up and at them?
I usually am up at like 5 or 6, not because like I'm getting up at 5 or 6 to go running. It's right. More like I wake up at 5 or 6 to make a stupid video. Like, ooh, I got to make this video right now.
Now you're like, you're going to have your bulletproof coffee and then you're going to do your 60 push-ups and then.
No,
you know.
I don't even drink coffee.
No, that's a.
I applied to that guy's podcast, but I don't even know who that dude is. And I don't know why everyone's going crazy about his coffee. But apparently, that stuff's pair good or something.
All the rage.
I don't do any push-ups.
No, I do the occasional
maybe
push-ups.
Maybe I eat fried calamari in the morning. Maybe that's what I do.
Yeah, that's...
And I add a little shimmy.
Yeah, a little fried calamari and a shimmy at 5:30 a.m. is always a good combination.
Exactly. Very, that's really all you need.
It's really you know, you it's a classic pairing. It's like, you know, you've got red wine and steak, shimmy and calamari with sauce at 5:30 in the morning. There you go. I am recording all this, thankfully. I mean, this
is awesome. That is probably, think about that. Breakfast, right? Red wine, a steak, and some shimmies at 5 in the morning. Your wife and your son come down. They're like, what are you doing? You're like, nothing. You have it over candlelight. You're like, what are you doing?
There you go. This is some fodder for your next video, right? You know, I could do a little snappy intro on you. I guess I should. I've got a little something from your website that I pulled. I did the lazy man's version of the intro as I copy and pasted something from your about page.
I mean,
hey,
if you just made up something. You're like, he shimmies on Sundays.
Full transparency here. He shimmies on Sundays. No, I'm chatting with Jeff Harry, who's an amazing guy that I've gotten to know over the last, I don't know, I guess we first got in touch maybe a year and a half ago or so as an intro, something like that, a year ago. And you're doing some interesting work, which I think when people hear this, it might make some people jealous. Like, what? This dude gets to talk about playing for a living? Yes. Jeff shows individuals and companies how to tap into their true selves to feel their happiest and most fulfilled all by playing. And he's worked with companies like Google, Microsoft, Southwest Airlines, the NFL, Amazon, Facebook, and so on, helping their staff infuse more play into their day-to-day. And he was just featured in a New York Times article all about play. I've got a couple questions about that as well. So anyway, check him out at rediscoveryourplay.com. And Jeff, Harry, my friend, welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is going to be awesome. I'm excited.
Yeah. I don't know if anybody might be wondering, like, what does this have to do with travel? I mean, I think there are certain points during longer extended trips where I feel like this sense of bliss where it's like, I literally feel like, wow, like the world is my playground. You know, I'm going to go out and I'm going to, you know, play in the ocean and frolic around, and I'm going to jump off this waterfall, and I'm going to go hiking and do this thing and explore this thing. And honestly, when I think about it, some of the joy of travel, I could say a lot of the joy is like this childlike sense of wonder rediscovered, I mean, to use one of your terms. So in that way, travel does kind of feel like play to me, like not all the time, but it's very much like kind of getting you in that state of mind in some ways. As I was thinking about this interview, I was kind of, it's not like something I thought about consciously, but since your work's around play, I was like, you know, how does this kind of fit in with travel? And then I was kind of reading in the New York Times piece, they were talking about sort of like this idea of novelty versus play. You know, I was trying to understand like, yeah, the difference with that. I just wanted to hear your thoughts on everything I just said.
Yeah. So I always like to first say what I mean by play, or how do I define play, right? So I define play as any joyful act you do which has no result, and where fully present, right? You're not having anxiety about the future. You're not regretting the past in any way. You're just fully in flow and you're just fully present in the moment. And if there's any analogy I use, and I use this a ton on podcasts, it's that play-oriented mindset is the travel mindset, because it's this mindset where you're like, yes, I'm going to say yes to this. Yes, I'm going to say yes to this. I'm going to hop on this moped, and this moped's going to take me to a deserted island. And then all of a sudden now I'm surrounded by all these people on this deserted island. Oh, I'm having one of the best parties I've ever had in my life. And oh, now I meet the person that I fall in love with. Like when you're in that travel mode, which a lot of people forget, especially because I speak to a lot of people that are in the working world and are like, I haven't played in a while. When was the last time I played? And I go, your most memorable moments, most of them are play moments. And the ones that people can attach to are travel moments, because it's when you're in a foreign place and you're much more open to all the opportunities and willing to just say yes to what might happen.
Yeah, that's such a killer definition. Any joyful act that has no result, which to me, like I'm pretty into Eastern philosophy and sort of like a Zen type of mind. Like, not that I can be Zen. I wish I could be like, you know, and all at peace, you know, but I am from the Northeast of you know, outside of Philadelphia, Northeast United States. You know, we're a little aggro over there. little filled with anxiety at times.
That Philly mentality. Yes.
Yeah. That Northeast US mentality. But I mean, think about any joyful act that has no result. Like you said, I mean, if you're traveling and you're not having expectations around where things go, and you're kind of participating spontaneously in the moment, and one thing leads to the next. And those are some of the most memorable, I guess, travel memories. And I mean, you know, you could almost be describing like meditation or just like a way of living.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, you know, expectations are the thief of joy, right? I forgot who said that, but they really are in many ways. And if you think about, let's just tie this to travel, right? When you go and you have this specific itinerary and you're checking off all these boxes, it's just not fun. It's one of the worst ways I've ever traveled, is when you know, you're just trying to hit all the spots. But when you are like, I've bought a one-way ticket, I'm going to go maybe to this like hostel or this place, and I'm just going to meet some people and be like, yeah, let's go hang out with that person. Or yeah, let's say yes to this like opportunity. You know, that is how a kid operates, dude. Like when they're in the playground and they're like playing with, you know, they come to the playground and someone's playing and they're like, what are you doing? Oh, I'll play with you. Okay, now I'm bored. Now I'm going to go play this. They're just hopping from place to place, willing to say goodbye to their play friend, just like you're willing to say goodbye to your travel friend and then move on to your next adventure. And you're just like more open to what's possible. And here's the best part is unlike, and I give this example of the groomzilla or bridezilla of like, we must have this event and the event has to go perfectly. When you are so fixated on one result, one expectation, you ignore all of the other possibilities, all of the other opportunities for connection, all of the adventures that you could go on. But when you really are in a travel-oriented mindset, then you're just like, you just see everything and you're just so full of gratitude because you're like, there's so many abundant adventures for me to choose from, right?
Yeah. Oh. For me, I would say one of the things that I do a lot that I guess I would consider play when I look at this is, you know, playing guitar or making music. And it's one of those things where you can totally be in the moment. And it's like, I'm not saying they're trying to write a hit song or anything. I don't have like a career. There's nobody even around, you know? It's just the joyful act. And with travel or anything in life, and I mean, then anybody that listens to this podcast know a lot of the stuff that we talk about when it comes to like travel also ties in with life and the kind of travel we do, you know, longer term or full-time travel and immersive and all that good stuff. It's such a like beautiful thing to do a joyful act and without any expectation or result, but also in some ways, it can be very difficult because we are a very goal-oriented society. So how would you recommend that somebody sets themselves up for success in terms of the day? Like, hey, I'm going to have some play today. Like, is there some kind of intention that people can set? Or how do you frame up sort of as you approach your day? Because it is so easy to kind of go about our days, right? Like we got our routines, are we going to go work? And then if you got kids, you're going to drop them off or do whatever. Like, and it's just like the day can get away from you, right? So like, how do you set yourself up to play every day in this way that you define it?
That's a good question. So let me try to tie it with traveling, right? When you're traveling, you're part of the reason why you're fully present in the moment is because it's so foreign and you're like, oh my gosh, like I got to figure this out, you know? So I think what you must challenge yourself if you're stuck in your normal routine is to break it. You got to break the routine. You have to do something different, first and foremost. Second, you have to, or I challenge people, you don't have to, but I challenge people to get bored. A lot of the times, the reason why the day gets away from us is because we start scrolling on social media. We start binge watching Netflix. We start stressing out about, you know, some part of our workday, right? It's so interesting that the mind has a thought that probably ranges from 9 seconds to 90 seconds. So when someone says, I have had a bad day, it's not that you had a bad day. It's that maybe you had a bad moment and then you keep running that bad moment in your head thousands of times throughout the day. So how do you catch yourself and be aware of that and then choose, be like, okay, well, what? How do I want to feel, right? And there's a part of like being able to get bored. And that means like that you don't have to meditate, but if that's how you want to do it, we're awesome. If you want to go walk, that's awesome. But some way get to a point where your mind is quiet enough that you can now start listening to that soft, quiet, curious voice. And then that curious voice is going to tell you, that inner child voice is going to tell you, hey, let's write that guitar piece, you know, let's write them that blog. Let's make this video. Let's reach out to someone that you really like are interested in, but you've been like really nervous about. Let's do the thing that you've been scared to do, but also excited to do, you know, and you just listen to that and you follow it and you see where it takes you. It's not going to be a loud, booming voice most of the time. It's going to be something super quiet, but something that it's almost that inner child that's like, play with me, play with me. And it always shows up, especially when you're traveling, because you don't have all of your regular responsibilities that are like screaming at you. So yeah, you have to block out a lot of that noise in order to hear that curious voice.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off-the-beaten-path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. If you love coffee like me, let me tell you how you can get an incredible cup of coffee, whether you're at home or on the road. You can use what I use, which is the AeroPress. Have you seen this? This is a device that uses a patented 3-in-1 brew technology. It combines the flavor benefits of espresso, pour over, and French press into one compact, portable device built for travel or home. The AeroPress has over 55,000 five-star reviews in 60 countries, plus it's the best-reviewed coffee press on the planet. That tells you something, and it makes an incredible gift. Under $50. Get one for yourself or somebody you care about. Pick yours up at aeropress.com/zero to travel. That's AeroPress, AeroPress.com/zero to travel. Use the promo code zero to travel, all one word, to save 20% off your order. That's 20% off. Thank you to AeroPress for the delicious coffee and for supporting today's show. Now, back to the show. That's good. I think, like you said, with travel, sometimes it's, some of this stuff comes easier just because of the newness, and to like, maybe, like you said, lack of responsibilities in some cases, and maybe even if you're working and traveling, you still have the responsibilities but for some reason it feels a little different. Like, yeah, maybe you don't have them as much, or maybe you don't have certain ones.
And I think also Sean Acor says this, this Harvard researcher that studies happiness, and he defines happiness as, the joy you get as you're striving to reach your full potential. And I think why it's important to express that is because as you're pursuing that, it's not easy. Like, travel isn't always easy, right? You can feel alone, you can feel isolated, you can feel, you know, like, I don't know where I'm going, you know, you can feel lost. But even in that, you're still playing. It's a different type of play, you know, and you're not joyful the entire time. You're not happy all the time. But if you're pursuing something that gets you closer to reaching your full potential and it's really challenging you, what happens is you actually get into something that they refer to in positive psychology called flow, where the difficulty of the situation and your skill set meet perfectly. And when that's happening, where you're striving to reach your full potential, you're doing something that's really challenging, but you're also fully present and you're using all of your skills to get through this. That's part of the reason why it's so exciting. That's why travel is so exciting. And if someone can figure out how to do that, you know, to find something that is really interesting and challenging and fascinating to them and match it up with their skill level, they get into flow. And you know you're in flow because you forget about time. You don't even remember. You're like in your zone of genius and you just like love that moment.
Yeah, that's, I think anybody that's experienced that flow, you know what Jeff's talking about. I mean, I get it with the podcast, you know, through these conversations. It's so, I mean, selfishly, you know, it's like I get to share these conversations and people get value out of them. But I also get value out of them by talking to interesting people like yourself and getting to learn new perspectives and hear things. And it's all in real time. And like, I can't not stay in the moment. And it's just such a beautiful, like, I'm loving just being here with you right now. It's just, and seriously, man, it's like, it is a beautiful thing. And I feel so lucky that I just get to do it and people actually take their time to come on and talk to me for whatever reason. You know, you talked about awareness, and I mean, I think you mentioned like if you have a bad moment and you're kind of replaying the loop and things like that. I mean, I think it's going to be one of the more difficult things is to cultivate an awareness in the sense that you know you're outside of that and you could be like, all right, like this loop is playing. I know this loop's playing. I can't really stop it right now, but like I'm aware that this is a thing that's happening rather than being caught in it. You're sort of outside of it. You have some kind of certification in positive psychology, right? You're a applied positive psychology coach. Is that correct? Okay. So because there's this concept of toxic positivity, which is like if you are basically being like, oh, okay, I'm experiencing one of those loops, but like that's stupid. I don't, you know, I have so much to be grateful for. Like my feelings don't matter. I'm just going to stuff this down. You know, so there's this balance of like, all right, even if we can become aware of these things, what's like sort of the next step to pull ourselves out of that and be positive without suppressing our human emotions?
Oh, well, so that's a great question because I think a lot of people think when they hear positive psychology, they think toxic positivity, right? So toxic positivity is almost manic. Because it's you're almost denying reality, you know.
Can you explain what it is? People like give people the synopsis.
So toxic positivity a lot of times is being positive regardless of the situation. You're almost ignoring everything that is going around, and it's almost delusional, right? That so what positive psychology is, and this is what's super interesting. The founder of it is out of University of Pennsylvania, Martin Seligman. He only created it or only founded it about 40 years ago. And the reason why was because psychology had been focused so much on what's wrong with people and barely any research had been done to figure out what's right with people. What are people doing that causes them to flourish, causes them to, you know, to expand and grow, because there's like this small subset of people that are in depression, right? You know, I believe it's like 20 to 30% in the US, but then there's this huge group of people in the neutral zone. And he was just like, how do you move people from neutral to flourishing? That's where the whole self-development, personal development, like, you know, movement happened. And so positive psychology is focused on that. But what, positive psychology does is it studies how to be aware and how to take in all of the emotions. So when someone is like feeling bad, let yourself feel bad. You should be allowed to experience all of the emotions. And frankly, actually, you should take in the complexity of emotion. Very much like Pixar's Inside Out. Like when my dad died in 2015, I remember being at his funeral surrounded by my family. And at one moment I felt joy and I was like, oh, what am I feeling joy? You know, I'm at my dad's funeral. But it was like, no, wait a minute. You can actually feel sad that he's passed away, feel mournful, and also feel joy that you're surrounded by family that are supporting you right now. And I think a lot of times people feel they have to have one feeling only. It's almost been told to us that we have to be black and white about our emotions. And instead it's just like, let yourself feel the whole emotion so that you can release it. In the book Tuesdays with Maury, Maury would always talk about that, where he would just allow himself to feel full sadness. And then once you're able to feel that, then you're able to let it go. I think a lot of people don't want to feel anything, right? They don't want to feel sad, but by preventing themselves from feeling sad, they also prevent themselves from feeling actual sheer joy. And that's why we stay in this middle ground. And you can feel it a lot of times when you're feeling stressed out, and then you grab your phone. Why are you grabbing your phone? You're grabbing your phone for connection. You're grabbing your phone for dopamine. You're grabbing your phone to numb yourself because you don't want to feel these emotions right now. You're like, oh, I want to feel these emotions. I must text someone, or I must hop on Instagram or Facebook, which only makes you feel worse anyway, because then you start comparing, contrasting, and you could let go of all that if you're just able to be like, to sit in the moment and just feel whatever you're feeling and not beat yourself up about it.
Yeah. It's interesting that you brought up technology, because I hadn't really thought too much about it. Me being the old Gen X guy here, I guess. I feel like the opportunities for play were just like more naturally a part of life before smartphones, before everybody had a supercomputer in their pocket.
Yeah. Right? I don't know. It's yes and no. It's yes, that is definitely true, because it's just so easy to never be present now. You know, even when you're traveling, like the amount of photos that we take, how many of the photos do you take, do you actually look at yesterday? Like a year from now, right? Right now, I think I have 40,000 photos on my computer. I wouldn't be even able to look at them if I did, right? But we're always trying to capture the moment. And here's the ironic part, is just like I said earlier, your best moments of your life, many of them are play moments. You don't have your phone with you. You're not actually taking a photo at the moment that you're having your best moments. But it's even funny that as you're having an amazing moment, you feel the need to pull your camera out to be like, let's capture this moment. And it's almost like when an adult was on the playground and would turn to kids and be like, hey, kids, you having fun? Is everybody having fun now? And it just ruins all the fun, because now you're just pointing it out.
Like, don't acknowledge the fun.
The greatest, you know, you guys have. So there is that part, right? But I also don't want to like glorify the past and make it seem like when people didn't have phones, they weren't not present otherwise, right? There's probably more of an opportunity to, but you know, it's kind of like, you know, back in our day, we were just so much better. And it's just like, were we, you know, you know what, you know, our songs were just as sexual as the songs now. They just were maybe a little less explicit. So I don't want to glorify the past, because I feel like even then, back in even the 1950s, they were bought in by some other Joneses thing, you know, of just trying to impress one another. I think what we have to ask ourselves, and I reference this because I remember what there was a study that was done where they interviewed 1,000 people right before they died. And, you know, the usual things came up of what are the biggest regrets. I worked too much. I didn't connect with family too much. But then another one that was really huge was I spent too much time trying to impress people that I didn't really care about. And I think whether you're in the 1950s or 2020, we spend a lot of time doing that. And if you can let go of that, you have so much more time on your hands to impress yourself and do really cool things. And if you think about it, those times when you've like quit a job and then gone traveling, it's because you're like, forget everybody, you know? I don't really need to impress my work anymore. I'm out of here. I'm just doing something for myself. And that's why it's so liberating, because you're doing something for you and not for anybody else.
There is that Dave Ramsey quote. It's like, I'm going to butcher it now. We buy things we don't need with money we don't have to impress people we don't like. Have you ever heard that quote?
Yeah, yep. Yep. That's so true. And then they're not even impressed. It's almost like seventh grade all over again, where you're trying to impress somebody that is you're never going to get their approval anyway. So I don't know why you're doing it in the first place.
You, as somebody who runs an entire business around play, I mean, but it is a business, and like as a business owner, you have a lot of things to do. You have to like figure out how to grow your business. You're trying to figure out how to make connections and all that. How do you manage, and this can go for non-entrepreneurs as well, but I'm just curious, as somebody who works for themselves as well, like how do you kind of do the play thing without that feeling of like, all right, I've got a lot to do. Like, this isn't really in the realm of productivity, because I'm not really doing all the things I need to do, like my business is in this place and I need it to be here, like in any given month or whatever. Like, should I do this? This isn't being productive, man. You know, like climbing this tree right now is not productive. Like, I should probably be sending some emails or making some contacts because I don't have any, you know, for you. Like, maybe it's like I don't have like too many talks booked next week, or it's, you know, a crazy, a pandemic hit and now all my in-person stuff. You know, like, how do you balance these things in your own personal life? Because I imagine like you have almost an extra like obligation to take your own advice, right?
Oh, absolutely. Well, so here's there's two things that are really interesting, right? There's the first part of like a lot of people, if they leave corporate world, right, to start their own business, they do it because they want a new lifestyle, right? But what usually happens is they leave the business, they leave their corporation that they're working 70 hours a week, and then they apply the same pattern to their entrepreneur business. So they don't learn anything from that, you know, they don't learn from the process, right? So I think if you're thinking about doing that, you have to be figuring out, well, what type of lifestyle do I want? Why am I leaving the corporate world to move on to do this thing? You know, do I want a 4-day work week? Do I want to take 6 weeks of vacation off? Like, first figuring out, how do I have this new way of working, right? And my new way of working is, you know, I make a lot of stupid videos. I make a lot of TikTok, you know, videos that I post on Instagram and YouTube.
Where can people find you on that, by the way?
Yeah, they can. My handle is Jeff Harry Plays, JeffHarryPlays. TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, all those. So I usually make like a video to start my day. Like, I'll come down at like 6 or 7 a.m. or whatever time I feel like it, right? And I have to play to start my day. I have to do something creative because I know when I do something creative, it positively primes my mind to then look for other opportunities throughout the day. It doesn't mean I don't have a to-do list, but like my to-do list still allows for curiosity where like maybe I'm like, oh, okay, you know, well, you know, I want to apply to a couple podcasts. I'm like, ooh, what's this podcast? Ooh, what's that? You know, and I'll follow that curiosity for a little bit and be like, oh, let me play today. Let me apply to a podcast that I never thought I could get into. Right? Let me reach out to a company. Like, this is some of the ridiculous things I've done even in the past. I remember watching a Marvel movie once and it said VP of creative services or something, creative director of something. And I remember watching the movie and being like, I'm going to email that person right now. I'm going to find them on LinkedIn. I'm going to figure out their email. I'm going to email them and I'm going to start working for them. You know, so like there's ways I can play in the work. And my friend Angie Cole, who I just love, talks about how, you know, there's a lot of masculine ways of leading and working and a lot of feminine ways of leading and working. And you can have both. And a lot of the masculine ways are like to-do lists and, you know, results and getting things done, you know, and a lot of the more feminine ways are like, let, you know, organic and like, you know, seeing more of the opportunities and following, you know, following like that inner spirit, right? She doesn't have a to-do list and she's crushing it, right? So you have to figure out for yourself, how do you want to play? How do you want to show up? How do you want to work? Instead of thinking I have to do it this way and believing that you have to do it the Gary Vaynerchuk way or, you know, the Brené Brown or Mel Robbins way, and figure out like, how do you want to do your work, whether you work, you know, for a company or you work for yourself, and then play within that. And especially during COVID times where like there's nobody that's an expert, and anyone that claims they're a pandemic perfectionist expert, they don't know what they're talking about. You are the expert of yourself. So listen to you, because you know more than anyone else.
Amen. Yeah. I the lifestyle first thing, definitely. I mean, that's, I'm 100% on with that too. I mean, that's kind of what we teach. And it's like, you know, if you're building a business, why not take a look at the lifestyle first, figure out what you want, how you want your lifestyle to be and then integrate the business into that. I mean, otherwise you don't want to end up, you know, working 70 hours a week and then you quit and then you end up working 80 hours a week for yourself. It's like, it's not a good trade. And I like the idea of the, you know, building curiosity into your to-do list. A lot of us have to-do lists. So like just kind of like being aware, again, maybe cultivating an awareness around this idea of, okay, like what am I doing today? What am I curious about on this? Like, what can I maybe play with on this to-do list, which might sound kind of funny, but I guess just be like, maybe it's reframing instead of trying to dragging out the to-do list and being like, here we go again. You know, I got to check all these off. It's like reframing it a bit, right?
Yeah. And I think the other thing, and I was just saying this on ironically a productivity podcast, right? And this productivity coach talked about in March, April, and May, the way she worked with her clients was all about mental health. It had nothing to do with their work, because mental health was the most important thing at that time. And that's what we have to actually look at. And then the other thing we have to look at is your to-do list. When was the last time you finished your to-do list? When was the last time you finished?
Oh, no, you can never finish your to-do list.
You never finish your to-do list, right?
Never.
So, gosh,
that would be like, I don't know what happens. It's like getting to the end of the internet.
Exactly.
You know?
You'd be like, what would I do? So why not look at your to-do list for the day, realize that you're not going to get everything done off it, right? Cross off the things that are least important on it, and then add in a little section for curiosity or some play thing. Get your three or whatever important things that you have to get done, and then play a little bit and see where that might take you, because that actually might help your business more than getting everything done on your to-do list.
We'll get back to the interview in just a moment. Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals, and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If one of those goals for you is learning a new language, or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel. They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian course area thinking, oh, I've got this. Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected, and I was like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. So I'm already leveling up and learning, and you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zerototravel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zerototravel, spelled babbel.com/zerototravel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, you lovely listeners, Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast. And we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening. Now, back to the show. How did you get into all this, man? I don't know the story, so I want to hear your superhero backstory, right?
Sure.
Was it Simone and be like, you know what? I like to play. I'm just going to make a whole business about playing, and then I never have to, like, then I can always, like, be a kid, you know? I mean,
sort of. So remember the movie Big?
Yeah. Course.
So Tom I Hanks. Saw Big yeah. when I was in fifth grade. Maybe in third
This is your
grade.
This is your origin story.
This is my origin story. You ready for the origin story? This is the origin story. I saw Big, and as soon as I saw Big with Tom Hanks, great movie if you haven't watched it, he basically becomes a big kid, even though he's like, he's a kid, he wishes he's an adult, and then he becomes an adult. And
yeah, he's an adult, but he's got like the brain of a 12-year-old.
He still has the mentality of a kid, yeah. right? So he goes to FAO Schwartz or some toy store one day, and he just starts dancing on the piano, and then the CEO starts dancing on the piano with him, and it's just like, hey, I like you. And he offers him a job at a toy company. And when I saw that, I was like, wait, what? What is that? You can play with toys for a living? And I started writing toy companies in fifth grade.
Oh, this really? Wow.
Yeah, I would write on my word processor. I didn't have like a computer at the time. I had a word processor. And I would type up these letters. And at first they were letters that were like, hire me, you know, like super short. And they didn't realize I was in fifth grade. And then I would start writing these long letters, like 5 pages long, with all of my ideas. And I'd send them to these toy companies. And I remember sending one, and then it got sent back because I didn't put enough postage on it. So then my rationale was like, well, why don't I send 5 of the same letter? So I started spamming toy companies before spam was a thing, you know, just mailing them out. And they
old school spam.
They thought I was a grown adult because they kept sending me these form letters back like, thank you, you know, but we have people for this, blah, blah, blah. But eventually in sophomore year, because I kept writing them, a company wrote
Wait. From fifth grade through sophomore year in high school, you were still writing toy companies?
Maybe not as many, but like at least, you know, 5 to 10 a year. You know, Activision was making a new wrestling game, and I was like, I got to send him my thoughts about their wrestling game, you know.
Wait, what was that game called? I like that.
I forgot. It was, but you know what I'm talking about. It was like this WWF game.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was awesome. And I was just like, you need to be able to smash them into the turnbuckle, you know.
Right. Yeah, yeah. You forgot the turnbuckle headbutt smash thing, dude.
You're not
come on.
Using that. So I would be sending them all these ideas. And then sophomore year, I remember starting to write them and asking them, what should I major in? And Cap Toys wrote me back and said, you should go into mechanical engineering. I shouldn't have listened to them, but I did. And then I went to college in mechanical engineering. And while I was there, I was at Tufts, and they were working on the Lego education software at the time. So like, I got to help with that, which was super cool. We got to test pilot that. And then as soon as I graduated, I just applied to every toy company I could possibly imagine. I moved to New York. I snuck into Toy Fair. I begged all these toy companies. I even remember writing a letter to the Toys R Us Corporation being like, you need to open up your toys in the store and you're going to sell more toys. And by writing that letter, that got me an interview with HR. And HR was like, you're such a weird person. You know, do you want a job in our Toys R Us International wing where it could lead to you being part of the product design team? Because I didn't even know Toys R Us designs toys. And I'm like, this is it. This is it. My dream. You know,
this was the thing you've done since like fifth grade.
You know, from fifth grade to now.
You kept doing it till you actually... Yeah, Brooklyn. Like you never gave up. That's really impressive.
I was in Brooklyn commuting to Paramus, New Jersey, and then 9/11 happened. And I remember sitting in my cubicle in Jersey. The towers are literally like, you know, smoking, or that area is smoking. And I hated my job. Like I was in this cubicle and I just felt like my soul was being sucked out of me because no one was playing. No one was, you know, there were no toys available. There were no kids hanging out. And I was just like thinking like, I don't want to die in here. And I remember telling my boss like maybe a week or 2 weeks later, like I can't be here, but I didn't leave Toys R Us. Instead, I went to the store they were opening up in Times Square. It was going to be the largest toy store in the world. And I ended up playing with toys underneath a Jurassic Park animatronics. You know, like the T-Rex from Jurassic Park? That's what I played under. And that was my job for like a year, just playing with toys underneath this T-Rex and hanging out with kids and coaching baseball. And then I left that. Moved to the Bay, worked for more toy companies. And every time I worked for a toy company, it just was so freaking disappointing. And then
because it was more corporate than you thought it was.
It just wasn't, it just was like they were selling trinkets, widgets, like they were selling microwaves. It didn't really matter. There was no one playful at these toy companies, which was so disappointing. And, you know, I had my quarter life crisis like a lot of people where you pursue your dream, you get to your dream and you realize, oh, that's not it. That's not the dream. Oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? And I remember like
you know, reading Poe Bronson and all these like life books, you know, and I was like, I have no idea what to do with my life. And I remember hopping on Craigslist one day and finding this really, really like low paying job as a Lego engineering instructor. I was basically getting paid $150 a week. And I went to meet this organization, and it was just these seven nerdy dudes just playing with Lego and teaching kids engineering with Lego. And I was just like, well, I could just do this on the side while I figure out what to do next with my life. And instead, I stayed with them I joined them in 2004, and I was with them till like basically 2020. And we grew it into the largest Lego STEM organization in the US. And it was crazy, dude, because like we went from 7 to 400 people. We went from like teaching 1,000 kids to 100,000 kids a year. You know, we expanded all throughout the US. And at the end, I was teaching 1 million kids. We had probably taught 1 million kids in that span of time. And what was ironic was we started working with tech companies because they asked us, do you have any team building programs? And we were like, oh yeah, sure. Even though we didn't, but the whole time we were designing this whole company, we were just playing and messing around. We had no idea what we were doing. We would pick cities because we wanted to visit them. We had no business plan. We just made it up. We would just say yes to opportunities, even though we didn't know how to do it. You know, like Facebook would be like, can you build this gigantic Facebook logo for us? Oh, yeah, sure. We got to figure out how to build this Facebook logo, dude. You know, we broke world records. We did all these crazy things. But then while we were doing that, when I was working for a lot of these tech companies, consulting and doing these team building things, I noticed that a lot of them were not addressing their biggest issues. They would talk about creativity, collaboration, innovation, but they didn't want to touch stuff like, how do you deal with that a-hole at work? How do you deal with that toxic person at work? How do you not be racist at work? How do you address creativity by dealing with your inner critic? And I was like, I want to make an organization around play that tackles these crazy issues. How do you deal with the BS of office politics where everyone's like walking on eggshells and no one is saying what they really think? And I was like, I can do this through play. I can figure out ways to make an experiential play workshop where you put people in other people's shoes and they play out scenarios like having a hard conversation with someone you don't like and just seeing what might happen. So then I made Rediscover Your Play with that concept. And I remember making the How to Deal with A-Holes at Work workshop with my friend Gary. And we just applied to really big conferences thinking no one would say yes. And then huge conferences like South by Southwest and like Inbound said yes. And then we were like, oh crap, we got to figure something out. We got to create this now. And by doing that, we actually started winning awards, which is hilarious. And we were like recognized as like the top HR influencers of 2020. I don't know what that really means, but we got that award because we were willing to tackle stuff that nobody else wants to tackle, right? We were willing to address pain points, but in a really fun, dynamic, new, playful way. And that's where I'm at now, right? And then just random things like I met someone through the Everything Conference run by Vanessa Tharpe. She helped design that. And I met someone who happened to be a freelance writer, and I kind of helped her with her one of her articles, and then we just kept in touch via Instagram. And then one day she just reached out to me and was like, you wanna be part of this play article? And I was like, sure. Who is it for? And she's like, oh, the New York Times. Wait, what? You know? And then that just organically happened. You know, she wrote it in 2019, COVID hit, and it probably was, she didn't even know if it would ever gonna get released. And then all of a sudden it got released, I think in like April or May. And I was like, sweet, this is awesome. But that again was me just playing and connecting with people. So play has led me to this moment in time with such adventure. So why wouldn't I just continue to follow this curious ride?
Wow. What a story, man. I mean, there's so many things running through my head right now about your story. I mean, I just cannot believe the dedication that you had and the sort of the unwavering dedication to this idea of working for these toy companies, and then just kind of your dedication to wanting play to be such a big part of your life. Like, where does that come from, really? Because a lot of people, like, I don't want to generalize like that, but it's like, you know how it is. You're a kid and you just play all the time, and then you grow up, and then you're like, I don't know. A lot of people forget like the things that they loved to do when they were kids and just stop doing them for whatever reason.
I think that's part of it, right? There's a moment when it was your last time you went to the playground. Like, that's a really sad moment. And you don't know that that's your moment.
The last time I went was this morning.
You see? So you go back because you have a kid, right? But like, where people are like, oh, that was the last time I went on a swing set, you know? And why did you do that? Because you wanted to impress somebody, right? You wanted to be like, well, now I got to be part of these cool kids. You know, I tell this really embarrassing story of my teenage years, but it's all about leaving my play self to try to be cool, only to realize that, what was I doing that in the first place? But I think people just continue to pursue that cool, wanting to belong and get accepted. And you do that in high school. Then you go to college and you try to do that in college by, you know, doing whatever all the cool people are doing. Then you go to work. And then it's all about comparing yourself to your colleagues, you know, who has the best car, who has the best house, you know, who's like getting a promotion, like whatever boring, who's going out and partying the most. And then you get in your 30s and then, you know, who has the best family, you know, who's getting their kid into private school. Like, you're just constantly in this boring rat race trying to impress people that you don't even care about, right? Just because you want to fit in. And it's just like, I couldn't do that. It just seems so boring to me. And instead, I would be like, well, you know, if no one else wants to play on the dance floor, I'm just going to dance by myself on the dance floor, right? And I reference this, watch this on YouTube if you get a chance. It's this guy, he's at a festival and he's dancing at this festival. It's this weird festival in Portland, right? And he's dancing in this weird, strange way. He's doing a lot of shoulder action, right? Who knows? All I know is he's fully present in the moment, enjoying himself. And then all these people start mocking him. And there's like many videos of him. One of them's 10 minutes of someone just laughing at him the whole time. But then there are these two people that eventually come over to him. And I think they first dance with him just to mock him. But as they come over to dance with him, they, you know, start vibing off his energy. And they're like, ooh, this is kind of nice. And they start dancing and they start having fun with this guy. Right. And remind me, they're at a music festival and everyone else is just watching these three people dancing. Well, after three people dance, some other people are like, man, that he looks like he's having the best time. And those other two people are very excited. So I'm going to go over there. So five more people go over and then five more. And then within 2 minutes on this YouTube video that has like, you know, tens of millions of views, he is then surrounded by 300 people, you know. And it's because he was willing to be his full nerdy, weird self, willing to show up fully. And he didn't care what anyone else had to, what they thought of him. And because of that, he was able to bring all this happiness to people's lives. And we all can do that when we fully show up, right? There's this quote, don't ask what the world needs, ask what makes you come alive, because what the world needs is for more people to come alive, right? We need more people to come alive right now. When do you feel alive? When you travel. When else do you feel alive? Not many other places. Then figure out what that is, because that's what we need. We need other examples of that instead of us being on our phones all day, instead of us trying to fill that hole with Netflix, with buying more Amazon boxes, with like just getting things that just don't provide us true happiness and fulfillment.
My wife, we always have the saying, you owe it to yourself to be yourself, right?
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of wacky dancing going on in this house. I'll tell you that. It feels good to just release in that way. It's so easy to kind of forget, like, you can just design your own business and it can literally be whatever you want. Like, you're just like, hey, I'm just going to like make these workshops and I'm gonna basically help people through play because I love to play and I love to teach people this and talk about it. And it's just like, bam, all right, I'm going to create this and here it is. And I think there is a, like some of these online businesses that they can become, it looks like everybody has it all together. But as you just heard, like from what Jeff said, you know, you're just figuring it out as you go. And even when you're working at the Lego Corporation, which sounds like, you know, they would have their stuff together, whatever, like, they're, you know, these programs don't exist. All right, I guess we're going to make them. I guess we're going to figure out how to make a Facebook logo. It's like everybody's just figuring it out, right? But like, you have to be willing to kind of put yourself in that position where you're like, you're willing to take things on and kind of figure it out as you go. Right. And that can be scary, but
I think you also have to embrace the fact that it's not going to be all rosy all the time. That a lot of times it really feels like a roller coaster at times where you like go down that rut and you're like, I'm never going to get out of that rut. You know, I remember seeing this TikTok recently where the guy goes, you know, when you start your business, you start with ignorant optimism. You're like, it's going to go amazing. Right. And then you go down this rut, this really rough stage where you're just getting rejected all the time. But, you know, if you're willing to sit in that and kind of enjoy the ride and learn from the failures, then you actually come out of that so much more powerful. And also, there's something really exciting about the failures. When you talk to musicians, you know, like famous musicians, and you ask them, what is your favorite time? They don't actually talk about the times when they were famous. They talk about all those rough times when they were traveling in that nasty, you know, van, you know, driving to South by Southwest and then performing at a bar here and getting stuff thrown
before it all happened.
Because it was like, it was a memorable moment. You know, it might have been painful at the time, but looking back out of it, you're like, oh, that was kind of joyful. That was kind of hilarious, right? That was ridiculous. I can't believe we did that. And I think people just need to learn how to enjoy that ride more and know that it's not always going to be perfect. And frankly, you don't want it to always be perfect. You need to be in those ruts. You need to feel that pain in order to also feel that joy.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to the quote you said from the, I can't remember if you said it was a Harvard somebody.
Oh, Sean Acor, yeah.
Yeah, like happiness is you're striving to reach your full potential, which is basically enjoying the process, living in that moment of the process and enjoying it. I mean, this goes for everybody, like when it comes to travel too. I'm pretty fascinated with the whole journey before the journey is what I call it, where you're somebody who's like, maybe you're in a full-time job and you want to travel, or you're ramping up to travel the world. You're trying to figure out, okay, how can I do it? You know, maybe I want to quit my job and travel full-time or become a nomad, or I just want to add more travel into my life. And like, just by having that intention, it kind of like makes you face some big questions right away, right? If you're like, all right, if I want this in my life, that means I'm going to need to change my life or maybe make some big changes in my life. Okay, what does that mean? Am I going to keep my job? Am I going to keep my house, or am I going to sell it? Am I going to like get rid of my stuff? And it's like all of a sudden now just the decision to add more travel into your life or to take a gap year or something like that is now becoming this like life altering thing before you even go on the trip.
Exactly.
know what I mean?
There's something so powerful about the anticipation. You know, there's this, you know, when you set up, you know, your next travel trip, you're like, you know, the months beforehand, and they've studied this a lot in positive psychology, you actually gain more happiness, more fulfillment just thinking about it, even more than when you actually go on the trip. So like there's a lot of energy around that, which then gives you more energy to start thinking about, well, what else is possible, right? You know, and there's this amazing Camp Indie person, Stephanie Lay. She taught me this in one of her talks recently that I think she spoke on the Nomadic Network, where she was able to get over her fear of just life by traveling and taking risks, by simply, you know, feeling really awkward when she was at a hostel and being like, okay, you know what? I don't know what to do. I'm going to say hello to these people. And then all of a sudden her whole travel situation changed because she now started traveling with these people. And then she was like, oh my gosh, I can do that. Now I'm going to say hello to these people. I'm going to travel with them. Now I'm going to say hello to this person that doesn't speak any English. I'm going to use Google Translate, and then we're going to become best friends in the next like 48 hours. And just that bravery then made her shift her entire life to be like, all right, I'm going to live a nomadic life. You know, something she would have never thought a year ago, but travel changed that mindset. And she even taught me this, that even now during COVID times when she can't travel, she instead, because she feels like an introvert a lot of the times, she found Camp Indy and she found these other networks of people that travel. And now she feels like she's traveling even during COVID times, right? And that's like the power of like your willingness to take a risk and do the thing that you used to do when you were a kid, when you played, where you were like, I don't know if I can leap from this one pole to this next pole, but I'm going to try it and just see what happens. And you're still doing that now as an adult. You have that opportunity every day to take that risk.
Yes. I was climbing a tree yesterday, actually. My daughter was like, she was looking at me. She's like, oh my gosh. She's like, are you scared? And I was like, yeah, a little bit. Like, this isn't something I do every day. But I said, it's okay to be a little scared sometimes. And sometimes it's fun to be a little scared when you're doing something because you don't know if it's exactly going to work out. Now, I didn't really want to fall and dislocate my shoulder or anything. It's funny how we get when we're older. Doing those stupid games is always, it's always fun. You mentioned Camp Indy. I mean, that was the event we were running, which is like another big reason why we decided to do it as summer camp, because we're like, well, how can we take like the normal sort of boring conference experience and like make it fun? Okay, let's do it at a summer camp. And then you were going to come and so kindly grace us with your presence and speak. We were going to hang out there. It got canceled because of COVID. We're hoping to do it this year. So I just wanted, if people heard you mention that, then I wanted people to know that what it is that we're talking about. If you want to come hang out with us in person, hopefully, knock on wood, this coming summer, then just go to campindy.com and check that out. You know, I mentioned something before that struck me, and it was this idea of, you know, you were kind of mocking the teacher that might be like, are you guys having fun now? Are you having fun? And like, I found myself doing that as a parent, right? And this got me thinking of like, this idea of like, it's not a good thing to try to like always define the moment with words. Like, let the moment just be the moment.
Yeah, let it be magic. Let it be magical, you know? Let it be whatever you feel like being. And a lot of times, and I think people forget about this, our best teachers of play are children, right? Sometimes you can follow what the child is doing, and the child will show you how to be present, right? I mean, they'll show you sometimes in ways where they'll do something dangerous, and you're like, no! And then you're fully present, you forget about all your worries. But there are other times when they're just like, just watch them sometimes, right? And they're just, you know, they're walking and all of a sudden they're like, pew, 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 pew. And you're like, what happened? You're like, I'm in a candy cane cotton candy cloud right now. Okay, like, that's amazing. Can I be there too? Sure, come on in. You know, it's amazing what they are able to teach us. And I think a lot of times we feel this need to teach them when I've been saying this on a lot of podcasts that parents listen to, where a kid does not listen to your words as much as they listen to your actions. They watch your actions and then they model your actions, right? And like, when you're thinking about, well, you know, what is it that I can do to inspire my kid? Probably one of the most impressive things you can do is to pursue something that you're really scared and excited about. And then also share that vulnerability with them and be like what you said, as you were climbing the tree, they're like, you're like, I'm scared. I can be an adult. I can be scared. And I also can be excited as I climb this tree. Because then they see how like, oh, that's how to be a full human being instead of us trying to be perfect for them or for anyone else, you know? And I think that is really powerful. Just not just for kids, but just for us to embrace in our own life that we should show up imperfectly, that there's something magical about us being imperfect, and that perfection is so boring. No one, like, that's why so many conversations are so boring, because we're both trying to have, we both have our perfect facades, and then we're like, okay, well,
based off of our perfect facades, what kind of conversation can I have? Weather. I can talk about the weather. That's safe. You know, that's safe. I can talk to them about how their day's going. You know, I can talk to them about what they do for a living. Who cares? Who cares about all that stuff? That stuff doesn't define you. I want to know the weirdest thing about you. That is one of my first questions I want to ask you. Why are you so, what's so weird about you? Share me on that. I want to, I'd learn more about you by you answering that question than you telling me what you do for a living. That's just such a boring question.
What's the weirdest thing about you that somebody doesn't know?
Ooh.
Turning it around.
No,
right
no,
on you
do it. Do it. The reason why I go, ooh, is because I'm like, ooh, there's a lot of weird things. Which one do I want to share? I probably have five different characters that show up in my voices that I don't realize. They just kind of show up all ironically. I even have a New Jersey Jewish mom accent that just shows up once in a while. And I remember, this is how I met my girlfriend. We were all hanging out, you know, everyone was just friends and we're going to a bar and we all made a pact that we were all going to take on accents. And the first person to break the accent had to buy drinks for everybody else. And then for 4 hours, because we're all so cheap, no one broke their accent. So I was doing this New Jersey Jewish mom accent. So insulting. I apologize to all the moms out, the Jewish moms from New Jersey out there. But I stuck with it. And she did a Valley Girl accent the whole time. And I was like, this is someone that I want to marry, this person right here. Because so yes, I have a lot of weird characters inside my body. So yeah, that's one of my weird things. Also, when I was a kid, I used to eat my boogers because I thought it made me go faster. That was another weird thing. So yeah, I got a lot of weird things.
Oh, that's good fuel. Here's my rocket fuel.
I literally would be like eating it right before a race. It was so weird. I called it vitamin G for gunk.
Vitamin G. All right. Did you have siblings growing up? Or
yeah. So I have two older sisters.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. And, you know, part of the reason, you know, my sister Tanya and Shayna both traveled a ton. They actually both lived abroad. Tanya lived in Colombia for a brief amount of time, like 2 years, 2-3 years, in Medellin before it became like a digital nomad place, right? And then Shayna lived in France, Japan, and China. And yeah, I think she knows like 4 languages or 5 languages now. But we got our travel itch because my parents are from the Philippines and St. Vincent, this small Caribbean island off the coast of Barbados. So just because we would go back and forth visiting family so much, we also hit up other islands and other random places. And we just got the travel itch, man. And now I feel, and I'm sure you feel this too, is just like when I haven't been out of the country in a while, I feel this, not only this angst, but I feel like I'm in a rut because I need to go to another country just to show me, oh yeah, the American way is not the only way. And also there's a lot of really other cool ways in which people are living that are not American. And I remember this when I was in Amsterdam with my nephew and this guy was just playing some random weird guitar thing that wasn't a guitar in some Amsterdam bar. And my nephew, who was like 10 at the time, went up to him and was like, why do you play this? Do you get paid to play this? Because my nephew's from America, right? And he's like, no, I play it because it's enjoyable. People do that. And it was just, you could see the shift in my nephew's brain because he's like, oh, I didn't know that. You know, so like I need to do that because I need to be challenged of my own core values so I can think differently.
Yeah. What do you think about the state of culture in America right now as it relates to play for adults?
It is bad. I mean, the state of so the way in which I think of America, because, you know, I remember studying abroad in Australia and I remember people coming up to me This was like 1999, and they'd be like, "What's wrong with America?" Back in 1999, this is before George W. Bush, right? Before Trump, all that, and it was America's so young. We're like 200 odd years old, right? 230 or 40 years old. So it's almost like a spoiled kid who's constantly telling everyone else that they're number one, while all the grown adults and all like the teenagers and all the other older kids in the room, right? All the other countries are like, which are thousands of years old in many, or their cultures are in some ways, are just like looking at us like, man, you're just so young and like immature. And the whole time we're like, we're the best. And it's just like, the best at what? Like, what are you the best at? And I think what COVID did was it revealed that, you know, we're a third world country with a Gucci belt on in many ways. You know, we've been trying for so long to prove how great we are and working so hard, like doing our 2 weeks of vacation and not even taking our 2 weeks of vacation, you know, and working 80-hour weeks or whatever we do to prove how great we are. And in the process, a lot of Americans are miserable, dude. And I know when I look at my family here in America in comparison to my family in the Philippines, family that I know that are living in like shacks on dirt floors, they know how to be more present and happy with their lives than a lot of my family that are either American or following American values, where they're just gathering a lot of stuff. And we're just so consumeristic that, you know, we've just forgotten how to play. We've forgotten how to be present.
What have you learned from your family through those experiences?
It's just that like stuff is kind of a waste, you know, like the
stuff as in material.
Yeah, material stuff. Like material wealth is not only is it not going to bring you happiness, but I came up with this term recently and I got to make a TikTok about it, but I refer to it as affluent deadness. America suffers from affluent deadness. And what I mean by that is we have everything. We have all the stuff. And even with all the stuff, we look dead in our eyes. I've met so many millionaires, multimillionaires, that could travel the world for years. And they spend most of their time stressed about either the stuff they're buying, stressed about losing all the stuff, losing all their money, right? Stressed about someone's potentially taking all their stuff, or stressed about the fact that they don't have as much stuff as the person next to them that has more stuff, right? And George Carlin, you know, did this whole bit about stuff where he's just like, people are obsessed with stuff, that we get so much stuff and then we fill our garages full of stuff and then we buy storage units to put more stuff in and then we go travel and then we have all these drawers that are available and we're like, we got to buy more stuff and then just to get more stuff. And the whole time we're trying to fill this void that never fills. And you can see that affluent deadness whenever I've gone to these rich parties and nobody has having fun. Everyone is trying to look perfect. Everyone's trying to impress one another. And then I'm out on the dance floor with the other weirdos, you know, just having a good time. And then people come up to us and they're like, oh, I want to hang out with you because I'm not having fun. And it's because they're suffering from this affluency that has not provided them anything for their soul. If anything, it's sucked so much of their soul and they just continue to gorge thinking that one day they'll be fulfilled and they never will.
So that's the state of culture.
That's the culture of America. Affluent deadness is the culture of America.
And, oh man.
And trying to, on the flip side of the positive part of it, right, is like at the same time you have people that are still, even though, you know, we're not meeting any of the ideals, you still have people that are fighting for the ideals of America, right? You know, and I referenced this recently in an article, you know, about Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And if she taught anyone anything, you know, her life is that she always was surrounded by people in power, and she was one of always the minorities there, right? She was always the only progressive, the only female there, and she still fought. Even she would still dissent. She still showed up fully, you know, was fully alive. And she still never like depended on someone else to save us. And I think in America, we've bought into this hero worship that there's like these people and we have to follow these heroes. When frankly, you are the hero of your own story. So you should just own that and like, and believe that you are as amazing as a Gary Vaynerchuk or, you know, a Tony Robbins, that you can do something as dope in your own way. And you simply need to get quiet enough, start playing, listen to your curiosity, and then show up.
Yeah. And like you said, show up fully as your imperfect self, I think you said before, which I absolutely love. Any book recommendations? You mentioned a couple books, and I'm a big reader, and I know a lot of people listening like to read as well. So doesn't necessarily have to be about around play or anything, but just in general, a couple, one or two books that have really changed your life. I'd like to hear what they are.
The most recent ones that I've been super into. Well, first I got to start with Elizabeth Gilbert's Big Magic, right? Which is all about creativity. But the thing that I love that she says this in the book, but she just also says it in life, is she's never seen someone go through personal transformation that hasn't gotten tired of their own bullshit. And what's interesting, what I love about that quote is back when COVID first hit, I wasn't making any videos. And then COVID hit, and the whole time I had been like, well, I don't have time. You know, I'm so busy. I have work. I have just so many things. And then COVID hit and was just like, you have all the time in the world. What are you going to do now? You know, and I had to face my own bullshit. So that's a really interesting thing to explore. What is the bullshit that you keep telling yourself? And when are you going to get tired of it? Right. So that's one that I really love. A book I'm reading right now, which is about America, and this kind of ties into the affluent deadness, is Winners Take All by Anand Girdagas. And basically he talks about how, he asked the question, should billionaires exist? Because as long as people live in poverty, billionaires shouldn't exist. But he goes even further to describe how not only billionaires shouldn't exist, but when we glorify billionaires, we ignore the fact that they are whitewashing their image. And what's interesting is someone like Elon Musk or someone like, you know, Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook do all these atrocities, take all this money from the government, right? And then they do some charity on the side, or they create this foundation, which still is their money. So they're just transferring their wealth to a foundation. So when they say, I'm donating 99% of my money when I die, yeah, you're transferring it to your own foundation where you control all the money. And if they simply were taxed the way they should be, we could actually benefit more than having charity, because charity is a waste of time. They should just be taxed the way they should be. So that one's really good because that just shifts your image on like the Elon Musks of the world, because that dude inherited a ton of money and then also stole many of the ideas around Tesla. But no one knows that because everyone explores and it's just like, he's amazing and he did it all on his own. No, he didn't, you know? So we have to not buy into a lot of these hero worship, because if you found out the real story, you'd realize like, oh, that's why they're so successful. And why I can also do self, but I need also support as well. And then the third book is this one called Cure for Stupidity by Eric Bailey. And that is simply asking the question, when you're having conversations, would you rather understand or be right? Because you can't be one or the other, you know? And it just challenges your fallacies about, you know, trying to be right. Because I think a majority of the time, especially in America, we always want – we say we want to understand, but really what we want to do is tell everyone how right we are.
Wow. All right. Those sound like three interesting – what was the second book title again? Give me that one, The Billionaire.
Winners Take All by Anand Girdagas.
Got it. Well, speaking of challenges, I mean, as we kind of wrap up here, I appreciate your time. I mean, I think we could keep talking and talking and talking, but I know you're going to get about your day at some point. Maybe we'll have to have you back on for a part two. I mean, be in person. That would be great.
That would be dope.
What would you challenge people listening to do today?
Oh, so you're going to throw out a little challenge. I love the Goodwill Hunt people. You remember Goodwill Hunting?
Oh, yeah. Great movie.
So for anyone that doesn't remember the ending, part of the ending was Matt Damon's character was a genius, right? And
spoiler alert, by the way, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, this is a spoiler alert, right? And he's at a construction site with his best friend, Ben Affleck, right? And they're working construction because, you know, Matt Damon's trying to shun the genius that he has. And Damon says to him, he goes, you know, I'm going to be living here and you know, taking my kids to Foley Field with you. And I remember, and Ben Affleck turns to him and he goes, if you're here in 20 years, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. And Matt Damon is like, what? I owe it to myself. I have this great talent. He's like, no, you don't owe it to yourself. You owe it to all of us, because any of us would give anything to have what you have. You're sitting on a winning lottery ticket and you're too scared to cash it in. And that's my challenge to all your listeners, is you all are sitting on a winning lottery ticket. So what are you going to do with it? How are you going to actually show up? Because not only do you have to show up for yourself, but there's somebody, and I truly believe this in my soul, that is waiting for you to show up so they could show up. There's a ripple effect that has to happen. But until you write that book, until you write that blog, until you quit that job and do that travel, like, dream trip you've always wanted, until you go talk to that person you've been super nervous to talk to, until you do all those things, one of those things, that other person can't show up. And it's your responsibility in your life to do this. If there's one thing you can do to contribute to this world, is to be fully you. Because when you are, you just give freedom for everyone else to be as well.
Thank you. Thank you, man. Thanks for your time. And if you go to rediscoveryourplay.com, you can learn more about Jeff Harry. And also, don't be afraid to play a little lava carpet on the way to the bathroom today.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this was fun. I appreciate your insights and hearing your perspectives, and gave me a good kick in the butt to continue my day over here. So,
let's go.
Last thing, tell me your best, we'll call it a dad joke.
Oh.
Got one?
Oh, yeah. Got one, Andy? I don't know if it's a dad joke, but I made up this joke when I was in third grade, and I thought it was a genius joke, which means it's really bad. What type of nut goes to the bathroom?
What?
A peanut.
Oh, peanut.
It's so worse. I thought I was a genius comedian when I wrote that joke and I submitted it. No one liked it. I was like, what are you talking about? This is amazing.
Come on,
magic,
play on words.
People.
Nailed it. Well, thanks for your time, man. And if you can hear some noise in the background, that's my son, my little peanut, coming in to get his poopy diaper changed. So I'm going to let you go.
Hey, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care.
Take care. See ya.
There you have it. Thank you once again to Jeff for stopping by the show and sharing a bit about his work and what he does. And I just find this so fascinating, this concept that you can create a job for yourself around something you love, and that something can just be the concept of play and playing. I just think that's so wonderful what he's done and how he's helping people rediscover their play. And certainly this conversation helped me do that in some ways. I mean, anytime you create an awareness around something like this through a conversation, whether you're in the conversation or you're listening to it as the podcast listener, it does kind of get you thinking about things differently, at least for a period of time, at least maybe for the rest of the day. And sometimes that carries over to the next day and the next day. And one of the things that I'm taking away is just to remember to play every day. Sometimes those days go by where you don't really play, and that's not good. Like I said at the top of the show, we don't know how many days we have, so let's play some more, right? And I love to play. You know, one of the things that I love to do is just dance around and put on a silly show for no reason. My wife and I do this around the house sometimes, and it's just like spontaneous. She'll start spontaneously breaking out and dance all of a sudden. It's just the best. I love, oh, here she goes. And she just starts tearing it up to some music in her head or what we have on the radio. It doesn't matter. And just being silly, just being goofy. And I love to be silly and goofy myself. Maybe you can tell that from listening to the show. It's just fun. And it's just fun to let loose. It's like this, it is sort of like the release valve from adulting, right? The adulting thing is kind of weigh you down sometimes. It's kind of like a thing that can lift off the weights and help you relax, you know, and not necessarily be like, need to be giggling and doing something goofy to play. I mean, you know, play to me might be taking a walk too and just kicking a stone or something like that. And, you know, having two small kids is a good reminder that of how important play is. And also, of course, I get more play in my life with them. But, you know, Jeff reminded me today to just, you know, play on my own too. Play and have fun with things. And why not? Why not more play? Why not more fun in our days? And I love how this concept really relates to travel. And one of the quotes he shared, expectations are the thief of joy. And I think that that is true in travel as well. So we got to manage our expectations in the things that we do. Maybe ideally, maybe not have too many and just enjoy that process. That's one of the big takeaways I had from this chat. What were some of your takeaways? You can always reach out to me and let me know. Jason@zerototravel.com is my email. I've been soliciting some audio messages from you fine folks out there in the listening community asking you to drop me a line. Just open up your smartphone and record some audio and send it my way so I can hear your voice and we can share it on the show. I just got one that I'm not going to share in today's show, but it was somebody out on the road trip in Texas. So I love audio, you might have guessed, as a podcast host. And I just love when I can get a bit of audio and get to hear from you. So if you're going to reach out, of course, you can always write me. But if you have time to record a message, don't be shy. Just record it and send it over my way. You got the email address. You know what's up. Thank you so much for being a listener of this show and part of this community. If you're not signed up over at zerototravel.com, you should do that because we have some stuff going on off the podcast that can help you travel more. And you get a lot on the podcast, but I would love for you to join the community there and you can sign up anytime right on the homepage. Now, this shout out goes to Lauren, who took the time to write me the other week. She even sent me an attachment of a video of Blue Jay, who comes to her deck to take a bath every day. So that was a little bit of a zen video for me to get. Anyway, she said, hey, we live in San Francisco Bay Area in Concord, a small town in the East Bay with my husband. Love your podcast so much. Started listening after the lockdown during springtime. It was a great zen moment to listen to you on Zero to Travel. It diverted our attention from all the sad news from the pandemic happening around the world and here at home. She goes on to talk about some of their travels. She said, some years ago before getting married, my trips included Cartagena, Colombia, Cancun, Mexico, Portland, Oregon, and Northbrook, Illinois. All unforgettable journeys. This is what I love about travel is it's so subjective, like what people can get out of it. I would never imagine seeing a Northbrook, Illinois on that list and next to unforgettable journeys, but travel is so meaningful. It's such a personal thing, right? The experience of travel is so personal. I love that that's on the list. And I have towns like that or small cities that, you know, for somebody else, it might've just been like a place to pass through or nothing special. But for me, it meant something. And so thank you for sharing this list. She goes on to say, our extreme moment was leaving home when we were young and emigrating to America from El Salvador as the war-torn, beautiful homeland was getting a bit difficult to get by. And we are here in California, been here for 35 years. It looks like yesterday when we started this journey. Goes on to say, thank you for the great information. It teleports us to all the places we probably will never go, like Antarctica, but we've been there through your podcast. Yay. Thank you so much for taking the time to write, Lauren. And I really appreciate you and the fact that you shared your story. And again, you can always reach out, jason@zerototravel.com. I read all these emails and love getting them. And again, thanks for the little Blue Jay video there. That was cool. All right, now a quote from the mystical, magical quote drawer, pulled out at random. This is from Nan Hue Chin, who said, "We leave this world with nothing. No medals, no rewards, no success, no failure." Powerful stuff there. All right, thanks a lot. Have a wonderful day. Smile, take a chance today. Go out and play. I'll see you next time. Peace and love.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.